And we're holding on Kofiud Gimel Amud Beis by the two dots, 8 lines from the bottom. We said in the Mishnah, Hey Rabbi Yechanan Chola, that Rabbi Yechanan ben Gudgada gave Eidos that a Ketana is able to receive a get. And then the Chachamim said to Rabbi Yechanan Manuri, you're wondering how is it that a Chershis is able to receive a get? Same idea. You see, therefore, that the person doesn't have to have das. So Amar Rava Meidusish Rabbi Yechanan ben Gudgada, based on Rabbi Yechanan ben Gudgada's Eidos, we can learn another thing. If the husband says to the Edim, see here, this get, which I'm about to give to my wife. Now, she wasn't within earshot of the time. Then he goes over to his wife and gives her the get, but he doesn't tell her it's your get. He says, take this shtar chov. Nevertheless, the gerushin is still valid. Because what's the comparison? Just like Rabbi Yechanan ben Gudgada is saying that you don't require her das, that it's fine when she receives the get and she doesn't have full das, tana or cherches. The same way over here, you don't require her das to know that it's a get. She'll find out afterwards. As long as, now, if you hadn't told the Edim, that would be different. Then we would say that it's possible. But if he told the Edim, making it clear that he still considers it a get and he still intends to divorce her with it, then he's able to do that. So the Gemara asked Shita, isn't that obvious? And the answer is Ma'od Tamei Mida Amala Kinsi Shtar Choyv Zeh. You would think, since he told her that. Since he told her receive this shtar chov batuli batle, maybe implicitly by doing that he's being mevatel and saying I don't want it to be considered a get anymore. Kamash malon. Therefore, Rava tells us he isad the batle la edim have a kamalu. If he really wanted to be mevatel, he would have said so to the edim. The fact that he said to the edim right before that that this is a get means that he still considers it a get. Since he didn't say anything to the Edim, shows he wasn't mevatel anything. The reason why he's saying to his wife, take this shtar chov, it's only because he's embarrassed to say to her face, here's your get. So therefore he pretends that it's something else, but he's not actually being mevatel it. And the fact that she doesn't realize at the moment that it's a get is fine. There's two different ways of explaining. And Tosfos points out that, I mean, it's not really, why is the Gemara asking Pshita? It's not so obvious that we can derive that from what Rabbi Yechanan ben Gudgada says. So Tosfos explains that Pshita is not, so the one way of learning is that Pshita is, that according, Rashi learns that it means according to Rabbi Yechanan ben Gudgada's Eidos, definitely it would have to be like that. If he allows a Chershes or a Ketana to receive a get, certainly he would allow the woman also to receive it when she's told that it's a Shtar Chov. But according to Tosfos, that's not really, the Gemara is not asking, that's so poshut. It's not really so obvious. The question is rather, Rava himself, why does he even need to tell us the din? Isn't it fairly obvious? And the answer is that Rava, that it's not so obvious because you would have thought that he's Mavat. Okay.
Now, don't we say that if a woman refuses a get, the get is not valid?
If she refuses the get, then it doesn't, if she refuses to the get, then it doesn't really matter. Until Cherem Der Ben Gershem, you were able to divorce a woman against her will. After Cherem Der Ben Gershem, it needs to be with her consent. So if she refuses it, then you start having problems. But up until then, the original din Torah and din of the Gemara was that as long as she receives it some way, and she knows that she received it, then it's valid. Okay, so now we're starting. Now we're going to start a new discussion, which is going to relate back. We're eventually going to relate back to our Mishnah, which we've touched on before. The question of whether if a katan or anybody else who lacks das is doing something that's usur, do we have to prevent them from doing it? So the Gemara starts off the discussion with a case. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Bisna ilkasa le'maftechei debei medrasha birshos harabim b'shabsa. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Bisna one time lost the keys to the Beis Medrash in Rishos HaRabim on Shabbos. Now, I notice Habach takes out the word on Shabbos because obviously he wasn't carrying the keys on Shabbos. So it would mean that he lost them before Shabbos. If we have the word B'Shabbos, then it means that on Shabbos they were looking for them. or maybe Shabbos belongs to the next line, Osla Kameh Rapados, that he came to Rapados on Shabbos to ask him what to do. Anyway, so what do we do? The keys are lost in Rosh Hashanah Abim. Even if we find them, we're not going to be able to carry them to the Beis Medrash. What do we do? Omalei, so the Pados tells him, Zil Dvar Tali Vitalia, go get a little boy and a little girl, or Rashi says generically a bunch of little kids, Vilitailu Hasam, let them go and play there. This was in the Rosh Hashanah Abim on Shabbos. You wouldn't normally tell kids to play in the street, but obviously we're not talking about that there's any concern that anybody's going to be driving down the street on Shabbos. So they'll play in the street. Now, if they find the keys there on Shabbos, they will bring them to, they'll bring them to you, or they'll bring them to one of the other adults. We're talking little kids. And look, we found these keys. And then that way you'll have the keys and you'll be able to open the Beis Medrash. So the Gemara says, Alma Kasomer, well, we see that a Pados holds cotton oichel nevelas, that if a cotton is, for example, eating nevela or doing other isurim on his own, ain based in mitzvah lafrishay, then based in does not have to stop him, because we're talking over here on Shabbos. This is an isur, we're on the face of it, we're talking about an isur daraisa of carrying the keys in Rosh Hashanah Abim. And yet we're not saying that based in or any other adult would have to tell these kids, stop, you can't carry those keys in Rosh Hashanah Abim. So evidently you're allowed to do that. So the Gemara says, Lema Messiah. Well, in that case, can we say that the following Braisa supports what Rav Pados says? A Braisa says, Lo yoma odem latina chovili mafteyach chovili chosam. A person should not tell a child on Shabbos, bring me a key, carrying it through Rosh Hashanah Abim, or bring me a seal. Ela manichoy tolosh manichoy zodim. Rather, but what he can do is he can leave the kid alone. And if the kid wants to, for example, pull out a plant from the ground, then even though that's a malacha, then he can do that, manichoy zodim, or he can leave him to throw things on the face of it. We're talking to throw from Rosh Hashanah Yachad to Rosh Hashanah Abim or vice versa. So that would be the same thing. The kid is doing it on his own and we don't make him stop. But Abaya says that's not a solid proof, because you could argue toilish ba'otzit shein enakuv. Maybe the expression that he's allowed to pull out of the ground refers to a plant that's growing in a flower pot without a hole, which all over Shas we have that such a thing, we had it earlier in the Masechta, I think, as well, that produce that grows in such a flower pot is not considered attached to the ground, and therefore daraisa, it's not chayev, and therefore daraisa, among other things, not chayev, truma and meiser, but in particular, also for our purposes, daraisa, pulling something out of there would not be an isur daraisa, only dirabanan. So an isur dirabanan might be different. And zodik, timeless dirabanan. And similarly, when we talk about zodik, might mean we're talking about that he's throwing something into a karmelis, which is dirabanan. And in fact, we showed him say that might be a reason bedavka why the braisa had started off with chavili mafteach chavili chosam. Why does it continue with that he brings him the mafteach or he brings him the chosam? Because maybe the braisa wanted to stress that only when there's isurim dirabanan involved would we allow it, but not otherwise. Now. The big question that Rishonim all discuss is that on the face of it, we know that there's a mitzvah of chinuch. You have to be mechanach a kid to do mitzvahs. There is, by the way, a very interesting sicha in Chelek Lamed Hei where the Rebbe talks about the idea that the mitzvah of chinuch is basically only derabon. Daraisa, you wouldn't really have a concept of chinuch, which would mean, in effect, that on a daraisa level, a kid could reach the age of bar or bas mitzvah and not know how to do any of the mitzvahs. And the Rebbe says, okay, on a daraisa level, what it would mean, as soon as they become bar or bas mitzvah, they're chayiv in the mitzvahs. Practically speaking, then Hashem is not going to hold them accountable until they have enough time to learn. But what about
the fact that Torah says Vishnantam Levanecha? That's the Oraisa, isn't it?
So here's the thing. So Rishonim asked, right, what about Vishnantam Levanecha? So Vishnantam Levanecha on a Doraisa level would mean that you have to teach them Torah, not necessarily that you have to educate them and train them in doing mitzvahs. But at least Dirabanan, you have a fear of doing exactly that, of training them in mitzvahs. So how are we saying over here that ain't based in Mitzvah and Lafrishoi? So there are a few major There are a few major approaches among the Rishonim, and all of them are brought in the Mechaber and the Ramah and in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch. One is that there's the Rambam makes a distinction, and Tosfos in some places, that we're talking over here about Beis Din, meaning anybody or anybody else, meaning other than the kid's parents. So the kid's father, and to a certain extent his mother, have a chiyuv to educate him, midrabanan, to educate him in mitzvahs, to train him, each one at an age-appropriate age, to do certain mitzvahs and to stay away from and then to stay away from doing certain things. But here we're talking about Beis Din. Here we're not talking about, for example, when Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna needs the keys, Rabbi Das is not telling him to go get his own kids to play in the street. He's telling him to get other kids. So he's not responsible for their chinuch. That's one answer. A second answer is there's a difference between esses and lois esses. There's a difference. You have to be mechanech a kid in doing mitzvahs aseh, but not necessarily in staying away from mitzvahs lois aseh, at least not until they're of the age to understand that doing such and such is wrong. So that's another distinction. And then a third distinction is also the distinction between his parents versus Isur Daraisa or Drabanon. You have Esa versus Loisa, and you also have there's also a third distinction as well, which I have to remember what it is actually.
Stopping him from doing something.
Well, that's basically the same as Esther versus Lois. Okay. In other words, telling him to do such and such versus telling him not to do such and such. I mean, there's a further distinction between Daraisa and Drabanan, but that the Gemara itself is making the distinction over here, because, for example, we're saying, Abaya is saying that we're talking about Drabanan.
Can't say, go get me this.
So you can't, right. So
he's getting something.
Well, so one second. So there's a distinction also the Gemara is going to talk about between whether he's doing it, whether his father is telling, the Gemara is going to say in a second, but Oisal Das Aviv, that there's a difference between whether he's doing it, knowing that his father will approve of it or not. In this case, with the keys, for example, they don't know that any of the adults are going to approve of it as far as they're concerned. Look, I found something interesting in the street.
They're completely not thinking.
They're right. So anyway. Okay, so let's go on, and I'll try to remember it. So those are various ways of reconciling how it is that you have a mitzvah of chinuch, and yet on the other hand, we're saying over here that a cotton oichon nevelus, we don't have to stop it. So toshma ovid kechavim shabal Shabbos, and Mishnah tells us in Shabbos that if a fire breaks out on Shabbos, this was actually yesterday's Rambam, interestingly enough. So if a goy comes to put out a fire that broke out on Shabbos, ain't omim like kabe v'al techabe, we can't tell the goy to put it out, because you're not allowed to tell a goy to do a malacha on Shabbos. We don't have to tell him don't put it out. Because the mitzvah of his shvisa is not incumbent on you, you are not responsible for him breaking Shabbos. But if a child comes to put out the fire, we do tell him explicitly, don't put out the fire, because you are responsible for his shvisa. So we see that you do have to stop him from doing an iser. So the answer is, there we're talking about where he's doing it with his father's knowledge, meaning that he's doing, so we're not talking about that his father explicitly tells him to do it, that for sure not, but we're talking about that the kid is looking at his father, and he sees that the father is standing over there, and this kid sees that his father is going to appreciate what he's doing. In this case of the keys, nobody told the kids that the keys were lost. Nobody realized that until they gave him, when they gave them to him, they could see that he was happy. But until then, when they carried them through to Shusar Abim, they didn't have anybody telling them that this is something that they should be doing. So therefore, it was fine. Kofi Dalit Amin Aleph. So the Gemara says the Kabbalah says Gaba Oyv Kachavim De Oisal Das Yisrael. Okay, well, since the Mishnah is combining together the cases of a goy versus a child, so that means the cases must be fairly parallel. So that means you're telling me that by the same token, a goy would be doing Al Das Yisrael where he sees that the Jew will be happy with it. Well, Mishori, how would that be mutter? You're not allowed to have a goy do a malacha for you. And the answer is, the answer is the goy is doing it on his own, meaning, in other words, as long as you didn't actually tell him, the fact that he knows that you'll appreciate it is not necessarily an issue. Because he knows, so Rashi explains that he knows, for example, he has in mind his own hana, he knows that he's going to get a schar for it. So he knows he's going to get a reward for it. So now this is applicable in general as far as the halachas of a middle akum, which was also the other day in Rambam Gimel Parakim, and those halachas get kind of complicated. What you're allowed to have a goy do or not allowed to have a goy do on Shabbos, and when you have to be moicha and when not. But one of the big distinctions is whether the goy is doing it at dait of the nafshe or not, as we're saying here in the Gemara. Then you have other considerations, for example, whether there's a possibility that he's doing something extra on your behalf, where then you have a different issue. Then you may not be able to have hana from it because he might do extra for you. There's also, Rishonim point out, there's a difference, and this is brought la'alacha, between whether you're benefiting directly from what the goy did versus here, there's a danger, there's something negative going on, namely that there's a fire and the goy is putting it out. You're not, as opposed to, for example, if a goy, let's say, were to turn on a light for you on Shabbat, where there you're benefiting directly from the light. Here it's more of an indirect benefit. All right. So Toshma, the Gemara says, let's bring another proof, going back to the question of whether you have to stop a kid from doing an Isser. Ben Chover Sherog Leilach Etzel Avi Imei Ama Oretz. If the son of a chover, where chaverim are careful about trumas and maisers, and he regularly visits his mother's father, who is an ama oretz. Now, it doesn't have to be obviously his mother's father; it could be any relative. But pashtus, we're saying it could be. It's more likely to be that his closest relative, an ama oretz, is more likely to be in that case where the chover married the daughter of an ama oretz, and therefore his father-in-law, and therefore the kid's grandfather is an ama oretz. Anyway, we don't have to be concerned that the grandfather may give the kid produce that has not been meisered. As we know, the whole concept of dmai, that amei aretz are not necessarily careful about meiser. So they're not misukonim. So they're, but we don't necessarily have to be. We don't necessarily have to be concerned. Misukonim, losh and tikkun. So they haven't been fixed up. They haven't been fixed up as far as truma and meiser. If the father finds fruit in the kid's hand, and the fruit might even be something which is chayev in maisus daraisa, for example grapes or olives, ein zokukloy, the father doesn't have to be concerned about it and take it away from him, saying it might not be maisur, so why not? So you see then, so doesn't that mean, therefore, that if a kid is eating nevela, so in this case, produce that's not maisur, then you don't have to stop him. The answer is Amar Rabbi Yechon b'dmai hikilu. Rabbi Yechon says that's different because dmai is only derabanan. Most amei aretz give meiser, therefore we can be mekel. So Tosfos points out that really it's not even we could say that we're talking about something which is derabanan. But in this case, we're saying over here, the fact is it could be Tevel, which is Daraisa. Nevertheless, we have a reason throughout Shas, B'dmai Hikilu, because Roiv Amei Aretz Ma'asrim Heim, and therefore there's less to worry about in the first place. So the Gemara says, Ela Taima D'dmai. So you're telling me only because of D'mai are you saying that we can be Mekel? Ha Vadei Bal Asuri. So you're telling me that if it was Vadei Tevel, then you would have to take Meiser before you allow the kid to eat it. Didn't Rabbi Yochanan say a few lines earlier in the case of the fire that the problem is only when the kid is doing it with his father's approval? So it wouldn't matter. In this case, the kid is not when, let's say his grandfather did give him tevel. He's not taking it and eating it al-das's father. It's not like he knows his father is going to approve of it. And yet, Rabbi Yochanan had implied before that only when oisal das aviv is there a problem, and in this case, it's not. Why instead now does Rabbi Yochanan have to use a different reason of because it's demai and specifically we're mekel? And the answer is el Rabbi Yochanan sapuki mesapulei, because Rabbi Yochanan actually has a suffix. He doesn't know what the din is in this case. So either way, then Rabbi Yochanan will push you off in the other direction and saying you don't really have a solid proof one way or the other. Because in the case of a fire, it could be that it's mutter on the grounds of Oisal Dasaviv. In the case of the Dmai, it could be that we're mako because the Dmai Hikilu in general. But you can't necessarily prove one way or the other from that whether if the kid is doing it on his own, do you need to stop him or not? From the case of the fire, it sounds like maybe yes, but from the case of the Dmai, maybe we would say not necessarily, and only if only by the special case of Dmai would we allow it. Which, by the way, the poskim paskim like a pedos, because the Noisi Kalim and the Rambam, when he deals with this, explain, even though Rabbi Yochanan has a suffix, since Rabbi Pedos was certain about it, then we can follow Rabbi Pedos, who was certain and he allowed to have the kids play in the suite over there and find the keys. So again, subject to all the. Rabbi Pedos Bepashtus is the father of Rabbi Elazar ben Pedos, but I don't know. Right. He might instead be the son. Of course, he was a Talmid Chacham, yeah. Say in that Rabbi Yitzchak. I don't know if he was on the caliber of Rabbi Yochanan, but evidently enough that we can pass in like him. Mind you, by the way, actually, there's a Rashi in Shabbos, because the sugya, parts of the sugya are also in Shabbos in connection with the fire, and Rashi has the gears over there that Rabbi Yochanan is the one who went and told them to bring the keys, in which case, Mephoshim explained that there are different gears over here, and it may be that Rabbi Yochanan is the one who said to go find the keys, and it's a different Amora who has a suffix about it. In that case, then we have every reason to pass him like Rabbi Yochanan. But again, subject to the caveats that we said before, where after all, the father does have a mitzvah of chinuch, and you have the various distinctions between Daraisa and Derabanan, between Esses and Lois Esses, between the father and other people, etc. Okay. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof. Ben Chover Koyen Sharogel Leilach Etzel Avi'im Koyen Amoretz. So again, you have a Chover and his grandfather, you have a child of a Chover and his grandfather is an Amoretz. But in this case, the twist is that the Chover is a Koyen, that both the Chover and the Amoretz are Koyanim, the whole family is Koyanim. So this child regularly goes and visits his grandfather, who's a Koyan Amoretz. We don't have to be concerned that the grandfather is going to give him Truma Tmeya. Now, Truma Tmeya is an Isur Daraisa. So we can't say like we did before, B'dmai Hikilu, and Motzavi Yodi Peres and Zokukloi. And if the father finds Peres in the child's hand, then he doesn't have to worry about it. He doesn't have to take them away. So why is that? And the answer is Betruma Dirabbanan. Because we could answer that to begin with, we're talking about Truma, which is Dirabbanan. Now we've learned earlier in the Masechta, there are certain kinds of produce which even to begin with are only chayiv in Truma Dirabbanan, namely vegetables, and according to many Rishonim, also all fruits except grain, grapes, and olives. Everybody agrees grain, grapes, and olives are chayiv daraisa. Everybody agrees that vegetables are darabanan. It's machlokas between the Rambam and Rashi whether other produce is chayiv in truma daraisa. And then
grapes, not dates, is part of that
machlokas. Right. So dates are part of that machlokas because they're other fruits. Right. But in addition, we also talked about earlier in the Masechta the possibility that all truma nowadays is darabanan. And the Rambam paskins that way, for example. So we're talking about over here Truma Dirabbanan. So even if it is Tame, maximum, it's only an Isur Dirabbanan. And again, we said before that an Isur Dirabbanan, there's less of an issue. Okay. Toshma, Yonik Tinik Vaholich Me'evedis Kechavim or Me'behemet Me'ya. A Braisa says that a child can go and nurse from a goita or from a behemet Me'ya. Now, behemet Me'ya, you're talking about an actual Isur because the milk of a behemet Me'ya is itself Tame. The milk of a goyish mother, of a goyish woman, is not in principle osir, but nevertheless, there is the midas chasidus that you shouldn't have where possible. You shouldn't have a kid nursed from a goita because it develops in him midas rois. It's metamtem asal, it's metamtem alei v'amoyach. We know the famous thing, for example, that Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't nurse from any of the Egyptian women. But nevertheless, al pi halacha, he is allowed to. The in choshin b'yonik sheketz, we're not concerned about the concept that he's nursing from something which is disgusting. Now, later on, when in a couple of months from now, Be'ez Hashem, we're going to learn in Ksubis about the halachas of nursing, and you have a point beyond which a child is not allowed to nurse because it's considered k'yonik sheketz. It's considered as if he's nursing from something disgusting. as if he's feeding from something disgusting. But here, with a kid, we're saying that who's still of nursing age, so he's allowed to. We're not worried about that. So the Gemara discusses over there that if he was weaned, then he can't return to the breast. But here we're talking about where he wasn't yet. But however, you're not allowed to feed the kid. You're not allowed to give him biadayim, things that are osir, a milk from a non-kosher animal, or nevelus and treifus and shkatzim and ramasim. Umikulan yonik mehen ba'afidu b'shabbos. Now, from any of them, from the goito, for the behemoth tmeya, though, he can nurse himself, or even from the same, from the nevelus and treifus or whatever. If he himself goes and starts sucking on it, we don't have to stop him. Ba'afidu b'shabbos, and that would be the case even on Shabbos, where you're not allowed to extract milk. So you're not allowed to milk an animal, for example, but even then it would be okay. Over godel osir, but an adult doing that would be osir. And the Braisa continues, Abba Sholom, no you're gonna unusha yuntum behemoth toda beyumpin. Abba Shol says we used to go and nurse milk and suck milk from a kosher animal on Yom Tov. So there was no problem of the milk itself being non-kosher. There could only be a potential problem of a malacha. And we'll see in a few lines, the Gemara is going to explain why they would do that and what the scenario was and how they're not being over on a malacha. Anyway, so the point is that we see that the kid is eating something that's osur, and we don't have to stop him. So that clearly shows that if a cotton is eating the velus, we don't have to stop him. So the Gemara says no, because hosimishum sakon. No, because you could say over there, if the kid doesn't nurse, he's going to die of thirst. So the Gemara says yehochi godol nami. Well, then the same thing would apply to an adult as well. If the only thing available for an adult to drink is by nursing, then he's going to have to be mutter to do that. The answer is godol boy undon. The answer is true, but with an adult, we have to evaluate the situation. We have to see, is it possible at least for him? Let's say, for example, fine, we're talking about nursing from a kosher animal. So there's no problem in a velos or treifus or anything like that. There's just the problem of doing it on Shabbos. So then we need to start doing an umdana. We need to figure out, is it a situation where he needs it right away on Shabbos, or is it possible for him to wait till after Shabbos, and then there won't be any isser at all? So the question is, katanami liboy umdana. Well, by that same logic, shouldn't we require an umdana for the child as well? Why are we saying as a blanket statement? If we're not sure whether katan oichon nevelus, whether we, people other than his father, are required to stop him from doing that, well then, shouldn't we say, according to the possibility that we are, shouldn't we say that we have to stop him and at least wait till Matzoi Shabbos and at least see whether we can wait till Matzoi Shabbos and he'll nurse then? And the answer is, generally speaking, a baby is considered endangered when it comes to milk. He needs milk right away. You can't expect him to wait. And therefore, we can assume that if he needs to nurse, then he needs to do so right away, and we don't have to start doing an umdana, unlike with an adult. So there's no proof from this that if it's not a case of sakana, but he's eating nevelus on his own, whether you'd have to stop him or not, we can't prove that from this one way or the other. Because here we're maybe only talking about a case of sakana, where we assume that a child is misukah and is in danger when it comes to milk, and then therefore when it comes to a lack of milk, and therefore we're going to rely. So we haven't really proved one way or the other whether you have to stop him or not. So in practice, though, again, we didn't have the proofs, but we did have what Rav Pedos said at the beginning of the sugya, that you could have the kids go play in the street and find the keys, and therefore that gives us a basis for saying that it's mutter. So in summary, and Shulchan Aruch summarizes the dinim as follows. Here we'll look in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch and Simon Shin Mem Gimel. If he's being over on Divrei Torah Lahan Osay, so Beis Din doesn't have a mitzvah of being mafreshim. Now, if he's doing it on behalf of a godol, then you have to stop him. Also, if it's something that's going to be well known to the rabbim and people are going to mistakenly think that he's doing it, that it's mutter, then you also have to stop him, even if he's doing it l'das atzmo. His father, meanwhile, has a mitzvah of chinuch. Oh, that was the other distinction. So we said the distinctions between we said over here that on the face of it, they don't have to stop him. And on the other hand, the father has a mitzvah of chinuch. So one distinction is, again, based in versus the father. A second distinction is esses versus loisesses. A third distinction is kids who are of age to understand versus not. the kids that were saying in this story that Rapidos is saying, go have them play in the street and find the keys, we're talking about where they'd be below the age of chinuch, they wouldn't understand. If you told them, don't do this on Shabbos, they wouldn't understand that anyway. Whereas, when we're talking about a kid who's older, who's able to understand the distinction, that you tell him no, he'll understand that no means no, then the father has to start being mechanechim in doing such mitzvahs. So it goes on to say then, so the father has to be mechanechim even in mitzvahs eseh once he's of the age of chinuch, and he has to prevent them from doing lois eseh. Now, even the father has to prevent them even from doing lois eseh d'rabban. The difference is if he's not preventing them from doing an isu d'araisa, if the father's not standing up for it, then Beis Din has to tell the father to do that. Whereas if it's only isurim d'rabbanan, then they don't have to. And then when it comes to essays, of course, different kids, not different kids, but different essays kick in at different ages, depending when the kid is old enough to understand the essays. Lois essays is going to be also, is going to be not so much we understand what the lois essay is, but he understands that no means no. So now the next piece of Gemara over here, after we digress a little bit to talking about Abba Shol's case involving nursing from kosher animals on Yom Tov, after that we're going to get back to this matter of the Isurim of Isurim for children. So the Gemara says we said in the Braisa Abba Sholem and Noygan Yinu should Yonkim Behema Torah be Yom Tov, that we used to nurse from a kosher animal on Yom Tov. So the Gemara says, hey Chidon, what's the scenario where they were doing that? We're talking about that Abba Shol is saying we would do it as adults. If the case was that the person's life was in danger, if they wouldn't do that after the Shabbos Nami, then why is he saying we only did it on Yom Tov? They could have done it on Shabbos as well. The Idaleka Sakana, if there's no Sakana after the Yom Tov Asur, then it should be Asur even on Yom Tov, because even on Yom Tov you're not allowed to do Malachas. So, after all, now milking is a tulda of the Malacha of Disha. There's a Malacha of Dosh that you're not allowed to thresh. That includes that you're removing, so what is dosh? You're removing the grain from its natural container, the shells and the husks and the straw that's inside. So the same way, when you're removing something from where it grows, in this case, the milk from the udder, then that's a malacha. So it should be equally well also on Yom Tov, even if there's no sakana. And the answer is, loitzricha de'ikat saira. The answer is, we're not talking about there's an actual danger, but there was tsar. They're suffering from thirst, or the Gemara mentions in a different place, for example, that there was some kind of heart condition which would be painful, something like angina or whatever, where the known refuah for it in those days was to nurse for an animal. So now Abba Shol takes the view that to milk the animal in the normal way, that would be mefarik, in the regular way, that would be a malacha even on Yom. But in this case, to nurse directly from the udder is only kalacha yad. So Shabbos to Isur Skila. So therefore, on Shabbos, where the malachas are also with a stringent Isur of Skila, Gozru Rabbanon, we would say the Chachamim made a gzera not to do the malacha even kalachayat. Yom Tov to Isur Lav, as opposed to Yom Tov, it's only an Isur Lav, Lloyd Gozru Be Rabbanon. Then Abba Shol takes the view that the Chachamim, when there's Tsar, then the Chachamim are not going to be Gozer against that on Yom Tov. So Tosfos distinguishes actually between different kinds of tsar, that if it's choly, then it actually, if it's sickness, then it actually would be allowed, even on Shabbos. Here we're talking about where he's hungry. So that's what Abba Shol was saying, we would do it on Yom Tov, because we're not talking about a case where there was sakana, and according to Tosfos, also not a case where they were sick, just where there was tsar, and it's only kalach yad, and therefore they would allow. Getting back now to the question of children eating nevelas or doing other isurim. So Toshma, we learn the Pasuk says, Lois soichlum ki sheketeh, and the Pasuk says about the various insects and whatnot that you're not allowed to eat, don't eat them because they are disgusting. And now the words lois soichlum are extra because it says several times already in the Pasukim over there, you're not allowed to eat them. So it means lois sa'achilum. So we learn from that means you're not allowed to feed them. Lahazer agdolim alaktanim means that the adults are warned not to give such things to children to eat. So what does that mean? My lab to omelahu loy sefu. So doesn't that mean that the adults are responsible to tell the children, don't eat these things? And the answer is loy, not necessarily. It means loy lispulelia biadayim, means the adults are not allowed to give the insect or whatever to the kid and so that he can eat it. But if the kid finds it on his own, not necessarily do we have to stop it. Toshma, let's bring another proof.
Imagine if we had to stop
them, you'd
go nuts.
Yeah, well, could be. Okay.
You'd go nuts with the children as it is.
Yeah, could be. Okay, Tashma. You have a pasuk that says that nobody is allowed to eat blood, and that also, that pasuk is also extra, because we have other pasukim that tell us that you yourself are not allowed to eat blood. So again, it means v'hazur agdolim alaktanim. It tells us to warn the adults to make sure that the kids don't do it. Again, my lab da amulahu. Doesn't that mean that the adults are responsible to tell the kids don't eat this? And again, the answer is loy, loy lispul b'yadayim. No, again, it might mean the adult is not allowed to serve it to the kid. But if the kid finds it himself, there might not be an issue. Toshma, Emor v'amar to lahazur gdolim alaktanim. What about you have as far as the truma of koyanim, where it says Emor, Hashem says to Moshe, speak to Aaron and his children, v'amarta, and you should say, and the extra v'amarta also means lahazur gdolim alaktanim, to warn the adults to tell the kids. Again, my lab de omelu loy tamu, doesn't mean that the adults have to tell the kids, the koyanim have to tell the younger koyanim, don't become tamei. And again, the answer is loy loy tamu lo be a dime. No, again, maybe it just means that the koyanim are not allowed to be matame them with their own hands. They're not allowed to bring them into a place where they're a mess, for example. But if the kid himself walks in there, not necessarily do you have to stop. So we can say that you're not allowed to give him, but you don't necessarily have to stop him. So again, in Shulchan Aruch, it goes into various details about that. So you know, you're not allowed to give him based on what we're saying over here. So it goes on in Shulchan Aruch to talk about what if the goy is giving the kid and the kid is below age to understand, so the father doesn't have to be moicha, but you're not allowed to tell the goy because I'm middle of nochri. If the kid is a little bit sick, then you're allowed to tell him a goy. Then you're allowed to tell a goy to give him something which is to give him something which is osur. Yesh Omrim, he goes on to say in Shulchan Aruch that any time it's necessary for it's something that's necessary for the kid, for example, food or drink for him, then you even be allowed to be machilah b'yadayim, something which is also only medivrei sofrim. And then it goes on with various distinctions within that. There's the difference between whether we're giving something for that we need him to drink, for example. Let's say, for example, you have an example that it gives there in Shulchan Aruch is Kiddush and Shul, where the adults can't necessarily drink that Kiddush because they're not that wine, because they're not being Yotze with that Kiddush. Can you give it to a kid? Versus things where the kid is only going to be doing them when he's younger, and he's never going to do it when he's older, for example, the wine by a bris, etc. So there's a whole bunch of distinctions in Stim and Shin Mem Gimel about these points. Okay,
why
so because, well, in other words, for example, let's say you have a bris on your kippur or something. If you have to have a kid drink the wine, he's not going to be doing that when he gets older. So therefore, that might not be such an issue.
9 days
also. Abdullah, yeah, the same idea. You give the wine to a kid who's of age to be able to make a bracha, but not old enough to understand what it means to mourn over the Bais HaMikdash. Yeah. So the Gemara says, Utsrik. Now, why do we need this concept of Lahazir Gdor Malaktanim set in connection with three different mitzvahs? We have in connection with Shrotzim and Dam and Tumah. So why all three? So because we need all three of them. The Iyashmin and Shkotzim, if we'd only been told the din by Shkotzim, you would say Mishum Isoran Mamashu. The reason why, maybe we're saying Lahazir Gdor Malaktanim, that you're not allowed to actually give them to the kid to eat, is because the Isur of a Sheretz is Bamashu. Meaning Rashi says not literally b'mashu, but kadosha, the size of a lentil. The same way as a piece of a sheretz, the size of a lentil was metame, of a shmoneh shrotzim. The same way the issur of eating them would be the size of a lentil. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation because in fact, it would actually only be a kazayis, like most things involving eating. So rather Tosfos says, what it is that when we say issur b'mashu, in the sense that a beria, that a person is chai of malchus for eating a beria, so even like one tiny little creature, an ant, for example, or something, if it's, even though it's far smaller than a kazayas, but it's a beria and therefore it's chai. So that's what the Gemara would mean over here, says Tosfos. Anyway, aval dam da ad de ikar revius. When it comes to blood, the issur is only if you have a full revius. A maloi, maybe it's more lenient, and maybe if the kid is, maybe you'd even be allowed to give it to the kid. The Iyashmin and Dam, on the other hand, if we were only told in the case of blood, Mishum de Ika Karis, you would say, because a person eats blood, they're Chayiv Karis, Aval Shrotzim, Eim Eloi, maybe not Shrotzim, which is only an Isulah. The Iyashmin and Hani Tauti, then if we only had Dam and Shrotzim, then we would say, you know why you're not allowed to give them to the kid to eat? Mishum de Isuran Shavu Bakoil, because after all, the Isur of Dam and Shrotzim apply equally to all Jewish people. Aval Tumah, but Tumah, which is unique only to Koyanim, Eim Eloi, maybe not. And conversely, if it only told us by tumah, you would say on the contrary, koinim shiny. You know why you're not allowed to bring the kid into a place where there's a mess? Because the koinim are different mishum the riba behen mitzvahs he says. Because Hashem put many extra mitzvahs on them, so therefore you have to be extra careful with their mitzvahs. Abel hani, but when it comes to blood and shrats and emaloi, maybe not sricha, so therefore we need all three. There is, on another level, there's a sicha in Chelik Beis, where the Rebbe talks about the idea on a deeper level, why you have it's mentioned in connection with these three mitzvahs. Fine, the Gemara is establishing why you need it to be said by all three, why we can't have learned one from the other, but still, why did Hashem pick it to say davka by these three mitzvahs? And the reason is because it's meant to forestall various arguments that people might have against chinuch. A person might argue, for example, that if you have somebody habitually does something, then you're not going to be able to break them of it. So we tell them dam, even though it says that the Jewish people were addicted to eating blood, shtufim badam. Rashi brings in a pasuk on Parshas Re'eh that they ate blood a lot in Mitzrayim, apparently. So you would think that maybe therefore you're going to think that maybe you can't, you're not going to be able to educate a person out of something like that. Nevertheless, the Torah is telling you do it. When it comes to shrutzim, who eats shrutzim? Only low class people. You're going to say that a person is so lowly, a person is so like almost less than human that they're doing such a thing as eating bugs. Maybe we can't have an effect on them. Nevertheless, the Torah is telling us you could, and you have a responsibility to. And then other people would argue, okay, you'd be mechanic in things that make sense logically, but not in mitzvahs that are l'mayel mitam badas. So therefore, the Torah tells us by tumah, even though the whole concept of tumah v'tara is l'mayel mitam badas, nevertheless, you have to be mechanic in that as well. So that's
it. That's why I'll be like Remez or...
Yeah. So that explanation of the Rebbe, right, is I'll be Remez or I'll be Jerush, I guess you would say, or something. The Gemara over here is talking I'll be Pshat. So you have both. So the Gemara is saying again that you couldn't have learned one from the other because one has unique features of its own. But in other words, the point is you still need both. The Gemara would be telling us why you can't just have one of them and you'll derive it to the other two. But we still have to ask why davka those three? Why couldn't the Torah have said this concept of emma v'amarta by different mitzvahs where we would say the same thing? One of them has a shiur b'mashu and the other one and the other one has kores and the third one is unique to koinim and for that we need the drush in that sicha about that teaches us the various aspects of chinuch that otherwise a person might think maybe are not applicable. Okay, so now that we went through all that, now we're going to bring in our Mishnah and we're going to do it, which is why we have the sugya here in the first place, and discuss, let's see if we can prove from our Mishnah anything about this matter of cotton or from the veils. So Toshma, we said in the Mishnah, Shnei Achen Echad B'Keach V'Echad Cheresh, if you have two brothers, one's normal and one's a Cheresh, Nesurin Shtei Achoyes Pikchus, they're married to two sisters who are both Pikchus. So now the Cheresh is Nesurin is only Derabanan and the B'Keach and B'Kachas is Doraisa. So if the cheresh married to the pikachas dies, so now the pikachas is up for yibum. So what does the pikeach baal pikachas do? Well, since his wife is her sister, no problem. Then the former widow of the cheresh is potter because her sister is married to the young. The usual case of potter of that they themselves are potter. But the Mishnah had continued that if the Pikeach dies, what does the Cheresh have to do? Motzias Ishtei beget. He has to divorce his own wife with a get because she's also to him on the grounds of being a chos to kukase. The Eishas Achiv Asura La'olam. Meanwhile, Eishas Achiv is going to be also forever because we said Chalitza he can't do because he's a Cheresh. And Yibum he can't do because her sister is still alive and he can't marry her sister as long as his ex-wife is alive. So the point is, now, Amai Motzias Ishtei Beget. Why would we say in that case that the Cheresh has to divorce his wife? Kesef Gabei, why can't she stay married to him? After all, Katan Oichon Nevelasu. This is an exact case of Katan Oichon Nevelas. A Cheresh is not Chayev in Mitzvahs for the same reason as a Katan. He doesn't have Das. So if he remains married to his own wife, then what would be the problem? He's doing an Isser, okay, but he's a Katan Oichon Nevelas. And yet the Mishnah is telling us that we make him divorce her, implying, therefore, that we do prevent a Katan Oichon Nevelas from doing that. And the answer is no, that's not a proof. Mishum Isura Dido. The answer is fine. From his point of view, there's no issue because he is because he's a cheresh. But his wife is a pikachas, after all. She's fully chayiv in mitzvahs, and she's not allowed to stay in such a marriage either for the same reason, because she is, because her sister is his zakuka. So that would be why he has to divorce her. So that doesn't prove anything about the cotton himself. Okay, Toshma, let's prove from another part of the Mishnah. We said shnei achim pitchim nesuin shtei achoyes achas pikachas v'achas cheresh. The other way around, where the two brothers are both pitchin, and the wives who are sisters, one's pikachas and one's a cherches. Mes pikeach bal cherches, mayas pikeach bal pikachas. So if the pikeach, the husband of the cherches, dies, so what does the pikeach bal pikachas do? No problem. Tetz mishum achos isha. The cherches is potter from chalitza or yibum because she's his wife's sister, and his wife, the pikeach's wife, is married to him fully daraisa. Nes pikeach bal pikachas mayas pikeach bal cherches. The other way around, if the pikeach dies, what does the pikeach bal cherches do? Same thing as we said. Motzias ishta the get. He has to divorce his wife of the get because she's married to him only derabbanan. The ishasach b'chalitza. In this case, since the yavam is a pikeach, then he can do chalitza, so the yavam is not stuck. But the point is again that we're saying that the pikeach, the husband of the cherches, has to divorce his wife. So again, Ramai Motzias Ishta Beget. So you would ask the same question. Why would he have to divorce her? Isn't it the same thing? Tesev Gabe, she can stay married to him because Kotten Oichon Nevelasu. After all, she's not, after all, any issue that she's doing on the face of it, we don't have to be concerned about because she's the equivalent of a Kotten Oichon Nevelas. And again, the answer is Mishum Surah today. Yeah, but in this case, you have an issue on him. He's a Pekeach, so he's not allowed to stay married to her. So one way or the other, whether it's the husband or whether it's the wife, that's a Pekeach, then you can then we're going to have a divorce because one of them is a ben das who's doing isurim, and of course, then Beis Din has to stop them from doing that. Okay, but Omar Rava Toshma, let's bring a proof from a third case in the Mishnah. Shnei achin echad cheresh ve'echad pikeach nisurin l'shnei achoyis achas pikachas v'achas cheresh. So we have two couples of two brothers married to two sisters. One brother and his wife are pikachin, one brother and his wife are cherishim. So mes cheresh ba'al cheresh. So if the cheresh who's married to the cheresh dies, ma yasa pikeach ba'al pikachas. So what does the pikeach, the husband of the pikachas, have to do? No problem. Tetz mishum achos ishtoi. Then the cheresh is potter on the grounds of being achos ishtoi, because again, the pikeach's marriage to his wife is daraisa. The other, so her sister is automatically also came as achos ishtoi. Therefore, no chalitza yibum is.
He stays married.
There's no
problem. Free. Is yeah. The cheresh free?
The cheresh is dead. The cheresh is dead.
The cheresh
is the cheresh is free. That's what we're saying.
She's free.
Mes pikeach baal pikachas. But if the pikeach married pikachas dies, mayas a cheresh baal cheresh. Then what does the cheresh, the husband of the cheresh, do? Same thing. We said motzias ishta beget beishes achav asur loylam. We said he has to divorce his wife because she is a chos zikukasai. Her sister. Because remember, his marriage was only derabanan, so it doesn't cancel out the zika daraisa. His wife's a cheresh.
She's got married to the pikeach.
So one second. So what we're saying is the cheresh has to divorce. The first step is the cheresh has to divorce his wife, the cheresh, because she, as soon as his brother died, and he's the only, and as soon as his brother died, then the wife of the pikeach, who is his sister-in-law, who was also his wife's, who was his brother's wife as well as his wife's sister, is also to him as achos zikuka. His wife becomes his wife. His wife, the cheresh, becomes also to him as achos zikuka, because her sister is zok to him. Now, in this case, we're saying the pikachas is going to remain also forever because, like we said before, yibum he can't do because his ex-wife is still alive, her sister is still alive. Chalitza he can't do because he's a cheresh, so therefore she's stuck. So now Rava says, let's consider. In the previous two cases that you're bringing, one member of the couple was a pikeach. Either the pikeach is married to a cheresh, or a cheresh is married to a pikeachas. So therefore, you could say you require them to divorce because somebody in that marriage is a ben das who is doing an isur. But in this case, we're talking about a cheresh married to a cheresh. Neither one of them, on the face of it, is chayiv in mitzvahs, and yet the katoni motzias ishta beget, and we still say he has to divorce his wife. Now, why? If you say that cotton oichel the velus based in mitzvah lafrishay, well, that explains it. A cheresh being married to a chereshes where there's an issue involved, namely of a choisikukase, is the equivalent of a cotton eating the velus. If we say that based in has to stop them, that's why based in makes them get divorced. But if you say ain't based in mitzvah lafrishay, then why would require them to get divorced? They're doing it on their own. And if we say that based in doesn't have to stop them from doing it on their own, then what's the problem? And the answer is, Amar Rav Shmaya, Gzeira Mishmat Torah Yivam L'Sho. You're right. If it was just a matter of them doing an Isser, then not necessarily would we say that Beis Din would require them to get divorced. But the problem is, we have to make a Gzeira. If they remain married, people are not going to realize that it's because of this matter of Katan Oichel Nevelos. They are going to think that that her kiddushin is strong enough to push away her sister, the Pikacha says Zika, and that it's not a chos sukkah. So people are going to think, therefore, that her sister is allowed to marry out without any problem. Now, like this, let's consider if it hadn't been a cheresh and a chereshes, if it had been that both couples are pikeach and pikachas, what would happen when one of them dies? So we said the other one. So we have two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. One second. Yeah. If the marriages were both Daraisa, right. So if we have Reuven and Shimon married to Rachel and Leah, and both marriages were Daraisa, what would happen if Reuven dies? Then Reuven's wife, Rachel, would be Potter, because her sister Leah, right, is married already to Shimon, and therefore she's an heir to Shimon. Right. So now what would happen in our case over here, where instead Shimon and Leah are both Chershim, if we allowed Shimon to stay married to Leah, what would happen is, and people would mistakenly think that Rachel is in fact Mutter to marry out, that they're going to think that his Zika, that they're going to think that Shimon's marriage with Leah, Shimon the Cheresh and Leah the Chereshes, is strong enough to override the Zika, and therefore that there is no Zika, and therefore that Rachel can marry out. And in fact, that's not the case.
What's the din? The din is that he has to marry Rachel.
So therefore, that's what we're saying. He can't marry Rachel. One second. So what we said is, therefore, So from the point of view of Katan Eichel Nevelos, we would say, fine, Cheresh and Cheresh are not Chayiv and Mitzvahs. From that point of view, we could have allowed them to stay married. But the problem becomes, not within their marriage itself, the problem is that people are going to think that Rachel, Reuven's widow, is free to remarry, when on a Daraisa level, she's not. Because on a Daraisa level, Shimon is not married to her sister. That marriage exists only to Rabbanon. So on a Daraisa level, Shimon has a Zika with her. So
it's like Zavikal.
Last words of the parable. Okay. That where the problem is, people are going to think that Rachel is in fact Potter from Chalitza and Yibum and can freely remarry, when in fact that's not the case. On a Daraisa level, she has a Zika, which is unsatisfied. Because of that, we make Shimon the Cheresh divorce his wife Leah the Chereshes, in not because they themselves are chayiv in mitzvahs, but in order that people should realize that their marriage was not strong enough to take away Rachel's Zika, they're going to realize then that Rachel still has an unsatisfied Zika with Shimon. Now, in practice, we said the problem is Shimon cannot do Yibum with her as long as Leah, his ex-wife, is alive, because they're sisters. And he can't do Chalitza either, because he's a Cheresh. So it remains that Rachel is stuck until one or the other, until either Shimon or Leah dies. But, Leah is divorced, and that's that. I mean, once she's divorced, she can be married.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, but Rachel is going to be stuck until either Shimon dies and then there's no more Yavam and therefore there's no more Zika, or Leah dies and then fine, her sister's dead and now she's able to marry Shimon. But the point is, that is why the Gemara was asking why we're forcing Shimon and Leah to get divorced if neither of them are chayiv in mitzvahs. And the answer is not so much because they themselves are doing an Isser, but because we don't want people to mistakenly think that Rachel is Mutter. By having Shimon and Leah divorced, that tells everybody that their marriage was not strong enough to override the Zika. Therefore, that tells everybody, that puts everybody on notice that there is in fact a Zika over here, and that until Rachel does Chalitza or Yibum, then nothing's happening, she's stuck.
When the Cheresh dies or becomes cured, then she wouldn't.
So when the Cheresh, if the Cheresh dies or becomes cured, then she can get married. Well, if he becomes cured, then he gives her Chalitza, right? Maybe. I mean, I don't know about that. No, he wouldn't be able to do Yibum necessarily because she was also to him at the time of Nefila. But he'd be able to do Chalitza because on a Daraisa level there was no marriage over there. But again, also if Leah dies, then also he can marry her. He can also do, yeah.
Why Why the Rabbanim have so much power? Why don't they allow? Because maybe it's too rare of a case. Why don't they just allow him to do chalitza?
Because we can't. The Chacham can't override something it's in the Torah. And if the Torah says, yeah, if the Torah says that they have to be saying certain words during the chalitza, and if not, then it's ma'akev. Then yeah. Actually, I should say that no. Even if Leah dies, it doesn't really help Rachel because again, she was also at the time of Nefila, so she doesn't become mutter for Yibam afterwards. So yeah, the only way would be if Shimon dies or if Shimon is cured and gives her chalitza. Okay, Hadran Alach Chemsh. The last two prakim that we're going to start over here are going back to a topic that we talked about previous in one of the previous prakim, namely the case of when there's edus that a woman's husband is dead. And what are the dinim as far as her remarrying? So in the 10th perek, we focused on the dinim of what happens if she remarries and it turns out that her husband is alive, where we talk about if there was one aid, if there were two aidim, if she needed permission of based in, et cetera. Here in these last two parakim, we're going to focus mostly on what kind of evidence is strong enough to allow her to remarry. The perek is nicknamed Ha'isha Shalom. There's three prakim in our Masechta that begin with the word Ha'isha. That 10th perek was the first of them. Then we have our perek, and then we have the last one. So the first one was nicknamed Ha'isha Rabba because it was the longest of the three prakim. This one is called Ha'isha Shalom because you have later in the sentence the word Shalom. Actually, if you look in the Rif, you'll see that the pages there are captioned Ha'isha Shaholcha, which is just the first two words of our perek. And the last one is called Ha'isha Basra because that's the last one labeled Ha'isha. Anyway, so the Mishnah starts off. Ha'isha shahocha hiu bailalam dinasayam. If a woman and her husband went overseas, and at the time, shalom beinu lebeinu levena v'shalom ba'olam, at the time there was peace between them and there was peace in the world, and now she comes back and says, my husband died, tinase, she can remarry. Because the point is, the fact that there was shalom between them means that we're not worried that she's going to. Now we learned in the 10th parak that if she remarries and her husband is in fact alive, then there are a lot of serious consequences, among them that she becomes also to her first husband as well as to her new husband. So as we're going to say further on, if they were fighting when they left, then we might assume that she's claiming that her husband is dead. She's thinking to herself, okay, so what's going to happen? I'm going to remarry. Eventually, my husband's going to turn up alive. Basin's going to say I'm also to him. Fine, I want an out of my marriage with him anyway. The fact that there are other consequences, I'm not worried about that. But if there was shalom between them, we're not worried about that. So therefore we accept what she's saying. Again, because Isha Daiko Minsava, she's going to be careful not to remarry because she doesn't want the various consequences. And there was shalom ba'olam, so therefore we don't have to worry, as the Gemara is going to say, that the Gemara is going to call it bididomi la, that we don't have to be concerned that she's going to mistakenly think that her husband was dead when really actually he made it out alive. So there was shalom in the world, and where they went, and therefore there things were peaceful, and if he died, and if she says he died, then we can accept what she said.
Mid Bali Tina says she can remember. What about Mid Bali Titiabis?
So one second. So Bovam and Mesbali Tinasim, Mesbali Tisyabim. And likewise, if there's Yibum involved, then she can do Yibum, because we accept what she said that her husband's dead. On the other hand, Shalom Beino Leveno Mochama Ba'olam. What happens if they are at peace between them, but there's a Mochama going on in the world? So now there's a possibility that in the panic, she thought that he was dead and really he's not, or k'tata bein l'bein of a shalom ba'olam, or they were fighting, but there's shalom in the world, where again, because they're fighting, she might say, okay, so I'll make myself also to him. I don't care. I want it out of the marriage anyway. Then we don't trust her, because in the case of k'tata bein l'bein, we say she might be trying to get out of a bad marriage. In the case of mochama ba'olam, we're saying that she might think in the haste of things that he really was dead and really he's not. Rabbi Yehuda says we never believe her unless she comes back crying with her clothes ripped, which then substantiates what she's saying. Omrulai, the Chum told him, no, achasu v'achasu tinase, doesn't matter whether she's crying and showing signs of avelos or not, either way, she's allowed to get remarried. Now, Tosfos explained, the Tanakhama had not addressed this matter of boicha or not, so that sometimes the Gemara will ask, isn't the last Tana saying the same thing as the first Tana? The answer is the first Tana in the Tanakhama of the Mishnah had not specified any of these details. Now the Chachamim are saying effectively the same thing as the Tanakhama, but they're clarifying that it applies whether she's boicha or not. So the Gemara starts off. Tana, Tana Shalom Bein Levena. Why does the Mishnah use the expression Shalom Bein Levena? Is Mishum to Kabbalah the Mystic Tata Bein Levena? Is only because later in the Mishnah, it's contrasting it with where there was a fight between them. And Tana Shalom Ba'olam, Mishum to Kabbalah the Mystic Milchama Ba'olam. Similarly, as far as Shalom versus Milchama. In other words, the point is, Tosfos says that what if we don't know that they were specifically at Shalom, but we don't know that they were fighting either? The default is to assume that they were B'Shalom. So it doesn't mean that Shalom Beinu B'Neim, that we actually have to have evidence that they were at Shalom. As long as we don't have evidence that they were in K'tata, then we assume they were in Shalom. And the same thing as far as Milchama and Shalom Ba'ol. Okay. Omar Rabba, my time of Jamochama, why is it that we're saying that if she says that he died during wartime, we don't believe him? We don't believe her. Mishum de Amra bididum. Because she may say something that she assumes. She didn't actually see him die, but she assumes that he died. She's going to think, she's thinking to herself, among all those who were killed in the battle, he managed to get away alive. So she's going to mistakenly think that he died among all the other people, when in fact it's not so. De'iktul, that though, who were killed. Who pull it? Did he get away safely? She's going to think to herself that that it's not possible. If everybody else around there was killed, Mistame, he was killed as well. And even in Tim Tzalayim, given to Sholem, Bein Levein, and Nakrad the Chazia. Now you're going to argue, okay, but if there's Sholem between them, what's the problem? Won't she wait around to actually see whether he's dead? No, Zimnin the Machole Begira Eberoimcha. What might happen is during the war, he might be struck by an arrow or by a spear. The Savra Vadenes. She figures he's for sure going to die of his wound. But in fact, it's not so. It could happen that they put a dressing on him and he recovered and he lived. So therefore, so that's the point that during Milchama, we don't necessarily take her at her word that she saw him die because she didn't necessarily see him. She might actually just be assuming that he died because she's going to figure somebody who was wounded like that is very likely to die, but she didn't actually see it. And therefore, that's not strong enough evidence. So, Sava Rava Lameima Rava and Enim Kumachama. Now, Rava thought to say that what if there's a famine in the area? So, Rava at first thought to say that's not like a war. Deloy Amr Bididami. She's not necessarily going to speak based on assumptions. But Hodo Amr Rava Ra'ovin Hareyu Kumachama. But then Rava changed his mind and said that no, it actually has the same din as Mochama, that they are also, you have the concern that that she may use Bididomi law, she may use an assumption rather than knowing for a fact that her husband is dead. And different Achronim talk about different possibilities. The Maharshal talks about that what it might be is that she might flat out lie and say that she saw him dead when not. Different other Mephoshim talk about maybe not that she's going to flat out die, but she's going to assume very strongly that he probably died of hunger, or in the previous case, that he died of his wounds or whatever. And we know that it happened once that a woman came to Rava, Omrili Baili Mester Rav. She says, my husband died in a famine. Omrila, and he says to her, Shapir Avdus Deshtes Vesnapsha. You did well by saving yourself. Now he was trying to test her to see, this is part of an interrogation, but not, he doesn't want to ask her outright, but he's trying to like see if she's going to end up saying something that disproves what she's saying. Because he says to her, Saka Daita Dubahi Puta Dinafisa, the Shafka Slay Havafoya. What do you think that the little amount of flour that you might have left for him in the sieve would have been enough to keep him alive? In other words, yeah, so obviously I accept what you're saying, that he must have died of hunger. And it's true, there wasn't enough food, so you got out of there in time. Amalei, so she says to him, Mar Nami Yodit Kihai Gan Loichoyi. And she says, yeah, as a matter of fact, you know that in that kind of conditions, you wouldn't be able to live. So now that tripped her up. That tripped her up because, in other words, in effect, she's saying that it's something you'd know. You and I both know that in a case like that, a person is not going to live. Meaning, in other words, she didn't actually see with her own eyes that he died. So therefore, so that caused Rava to change his mind and say that even in Rava, it might be, as the Maharshal says, she might outright lie, as other Mephoshim say, maybe not, but she would make an assumption. Whatever it is, the point is that's what she was doing. She was saying, it ends up that she's saying, yeah, you and I both know that a person in such conditions is not going to live, implying that she didn't actually see it. Hoda Amar Rava, Ravin Griya Mechama. Then Rava says that after all, Rava changed his mind further and said that to say that he died in famine is even worse than Mechama. in the sense, the other Mohammed, Kiyama mess by the Mohammed, who do I mehemna? If she says my husband died during war, then we don't believe her. How mess on me toss him mehemna. But if she says that during the wartime he died peacefully in bed, we would believe her. Because if he's peacefully in bed, then there's no panic. She's not having to run away because of the war. So therefore, she really died. When he was injured, for example, she may think, you know, he's injured on the battlefield and that's it. How is he going to survive? But if he's in bed, then she has no reason to assume that. And also she herself is not in a panic to run away from the Milchama, because he's in bed after all. On the other hand, when it comes to hunger, it has to be that she has to actually say he died and I buried him. Because by Rav, she's going to think to herself, he has no food. How is he possibly going to live? And she doesn't realize that somehow unexpectedly he could get food, or that he might live off his body's stored reserves longer than she expects or whatever. And therefore, only if she actually says I buried him, only then do we believe her. There is actually a point that Amnam says that when it comes to Mochama, even if she says I buried him, then we don't necessarily believe her. And the Noisa Kalim and the Amnam have a huge discussion about that. Why would that be so? One of them again might be because since we're talking about in Mochama, she might actually be in a panic and running away, and she might claim that she buried him when really she didn't, or she might be confusing his body with somebody else's. She might have found a body over there which she thinks is her husband's and buried it, and really it turns out to be somebody else. So we'll continue that discussion tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, about when we believe her and when we don't, and about various dinim in this regard. Okay, everyone.